Decoded Podcast, Season 4, Episode 25. The world keeps moving, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't stop for anything. You can try to make it stop, but it doesn't work.
Yeah. I'm kind of okay with that. That kind of makes me feel, just that statement that you just said kind of makes me feel hopeful. I don't know. I know I'm saying it with inflection, but I'm questioning it. I'm questioning it, right?
When you say hopeful, you mean you're hopeful that the world's moving. Things are still moving. That gives you hope.
Yeah, and you know, I have a strange relationship with hope.
Mm-hmm.
I think the hope for me is pragmatic hope, and the hope, because so you say the world. I know I'm in the world, but I'm not the world. So when I think to myself, the world moves on, is that's with or without me?
Mm-hmm.
And do I want to lean on, you know, this idea that I'm mortal? Nope. Okay, bench that for another time. But I think my brain kind of does that with that particular statement that you just did. It says that the world keeps moving, and there's a little bit of that element of, I got choice, get on board, or, well, that's it. Let's say that's the only choice, get on board. And I don't have a really pithy way to, you know, spin this back to something that's kind of like I'll just say flat out, if when people say, you know, this is the world and this is our education system and this is what we have to sort of deal with, I think to myself, my only choice is to get on board with it. Like there's no space to not be on board with it. Cause I think to myself, it would be worse for me if I wasn't on board with it. If I wasn't, like we were saying in the on-ramp, looking directly at what is, and spending some time there in what is. I don't know. I think I feel like I fluffed that poorly. Like I didn't really get to a good point on it. Save me, Roland.
I was just going to say, you and I were talking about what is and what's next. And I think I took a lot of time to explain what that means to me on the on-ramp. I think I'm the type of guy that needs to understand what is. And sometimes that frustrates me. Like learning about what is happening right now, currently, it's frustrating to me. But I've learned that I need to sit with that frustration before I can effectively move to the what's next. This is something I've learned about myself, and I'm not sure where it came from or how it came to be. But I do know that I have great respect for people who deal with what's in front of them and acknowledge what's in front of them and then look to move forward. I don't particularly enjoy people who don't look at what's currently happening and are always looking at what's next. Like, oh, there's some issue right now, but we're not going to focus on the negative. But there's positive and negative to everything. And I'm the type that really needs to look at the positive and the negative and then move on. And that usually means that I move into a positive place, because you got to move forward. You got to do what you can to make things better. And my example with this is what's happened at my school this last week.
Big week.
So this, my school has been dealing with COVID in the building, like other schools have. But it's gotten to the point where we've had to close classes and send them home and work virtually. And so I guess late last week, it was discovered that in one classroom, there were a couple of people who tested positive for COVID. So that class got shut down. And then maybe a day later or 2 days later, we found out that a second class was now shut down. And then we had a snow day, an asynchronous online learning day. And then the next day when we went back to school, we found out that another class was getting shut down. So the work week is starting and we've got three classes shut down at school. And then we've got siblings of those kids in those classes who aren't coming now because they're trying to figure out, are they sick? Are they not sick? Is it safe for them to be at school? Now, while all this is happening, one of the main planning time teachers and the main French teacher are now not at school because they work with the classes that had to go home. And that also includes EAs and that includes ESL teachers. And so it's like we were hit pretty hard with people that couldn't be at school. And there's nobody to replace them. So we weren't getting supply teachers or supply EAs coming in. And so it felt like a skeletal crew. Like, we have a framework of people there to make the building work, but there's no planning time. There's no planning time. There's no collegial conversations happening because everybody's kind of staying in their own corners of the building. Administration is running around dealing with the class closures and the notifications and all the things that come with that. And so it was a dark week. It was a dark week in a number of different ways. And then we found out our school was going to close for a week. And we were all going to go virtual. And I didn't particularly like the whole virtual experience. The 5 weeks that we did from home recently wasn't my cup of tea. But having gone through this week at school, with the way things look and how people are, when you're in the middle of missing all kinds of staff members to do their work in the building, I was more than happy when I found out that we were going virtual. And, you know, even when I was explaining to my wife, she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, she was like, this is going to really suck. And I'm like, you know what? I don't think so. And then I started to provide her with all the positives of the situation. And she goes, hey, be careful. You might catch yourself wanting to move to the virtual school because you'll look pretty darn happy to be working virtual for the next week. And I said, well, let's look at why. And I explained, you know, I'm not seeing my colleagues at work the same way that I did before all of this happened. So there's that. So I'm working from home. I'm not missing anybody because I can't really see them at work anyway. All my kids will be in my class, not, you know, two-thirds here and a third here. And I'm planning face-to-face lessons and I'm planning remote lessons, which was killing me. I finally have the technology to do better, right? Because I bought a new computer, and I was really happy about that. And now I feel like I have a machine that can do the heavy lifting. And I don't have to go to school and worry whether I'm going to have preparation time to do stuff for my kids, with my kids, for myself. I get that when I'm virtual. I get that time. I get to sit here, turn off the camera, and work on other stuff. And I also have a bit more freedom. I'm not bound by any bells. You know, I don't have somebody coming to my door and instruct me on this going to happen, that's going to happen. I'm just here with my kids teaching. And my principals gave us the best gift they could give us when they told us we were going remote. They gave us some time to breathe. They gave us the gift of time to plan for the shift. Because I don't know if I said this last week on the cast. I think I did about every time I shift, I lose a part of me. I lose something in that shift. And so here we go again with a shift. And we were given, you're going to love this, we were given like a 2.5 hour window. We were told, we're closing the school tomorrow. We have to make things happen now. And here's the proud part of the pivot. And I hate that word now, but here's the proud part of the pivot.
I've never seen, I've never heard the triple P before.
Oh, P3, baby.
P3. That's already taken, though, I think.
Okay.
I think we got a colleague that's already doing the P3. So but, let's... let's sub-market it. It's like sub-tweeting. So every time we're hashtagging, you know, P3 or whatever, we're actually talking about the proud part of the pivot.
Can we do the, instead of the, can we just call it hashtag 3P instead of P3?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. How about that? Hashtag 3P.
I like that. So here's the proud part of the pivot. And this is the stuff I live for, because you know I really enjoy being fluent in something. Fluency is a big deal to me. As soon as my principal, so my principal comes on the PA system and says, I'm sending everybody an email in the next minute. You must check it. I'm sorry. And then PA's off. Check, and then, you know, the teacher next door.
Principal said, I'm sorry?
Yes. I don't remember if he actually said, I'm sorry, but he was apologizing because he was about to come on. He was about to have a school assembly, a virtual school assembly, so that the teachers could have a little bit of time to do some planning while he was leading the school in an assembly.
Right.
So he comes on, he's like, we're not having the assembly.
Okay. Which
killed everybody. But I'm sending you an email in a minute and you'll see why I'm not having the assembly. So bam, I'm sorry.
3P.
3P, baby. So then we, the teacher next door pokes her head in and she's like, where's the email? And she's holding her phone and she's just hitting refresh. What's happening? I'm like, it'll come. And then boom, it pops in. We're closing the school tomorrow. No school. We will not be at school tomorrow. We have to pivot. We have to get everybody what they need for the next week. Okay. So then the bell rings. We bring the kids in from lunch. He comes on the PA system and he tells the school what's happening. He's like, kids, we have to close the school for a week. We're going to figure out what you need before we send you home. And I'm going to be sending home a letter explaining to your parents what's going on and all that good stuff. So now he's running around and so is the VP, like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to make this happen.
Mm-hmm.
I know the cost of the pivot. So I feel I'm sitting in the what is for a minute or two. Then I'm like, okay, what's next? Kids come in, they sit down. I have a Chromebook tub in our classroom. So instantly I jump out of the chair and I'm like, okay, who got a Chromebook for the last pivot? I write down their names on the board. Then I say to the kids, who's got a school Chromebook? Take it out of your desk. Because I don't collect the computers every day because then I have to clean them all. So I assign a computer to a kid. So yeah. I'm like, Joe, you get school Chromebook number 5. It's yours until it needs to be charged. when it needs to be charged, I'll clean it, charge it, then I'll give it back to you, and you can keep it for 3 or 4 days, and I don't have to worry about cleaning it. It's yours, right?
Yep.
I'm like, who's got number one? Who's got number two? Get them out now. Crack them open. Open them up so I can clean them, and then we'll put them in the tub, and we'll start charging them and wait for somebody to come pick them up. So like, okay, Mr. C. So I give them some work to do while I'm doing that. So I'm feeling proud because I've got names on the board of the kids that need a computer. I've collected and cleaned the Chromebooks that belong to the school. They're in the bucket. The bucket's waiting because somebody's going to come take that bucket. I already know. They don't have to tell me. It's coming because they need computers to give to kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody comes to my door and they're like, I'm really sorry to bother you, but I have a class list. Can you highlight the names of the kids who need a computer? I'm like, yeah. She's like, I'll come back later and get it. I said, you don't need to go anywhere. All I need is 30 seconds. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, look at the board. I already know who needs a computer. So I grab a highlighter, highlight the names on the list. She goes, and I'm really sorry, but I'm going to need to take your Chromebook tub. I said, it's ready. She's like, it's ready. I'm like, the computers are cleaned. The bucket's cleaned. I haven't touched it since I've cleaned it. You can just pick it up and go. She's like, are you serious? I'm like, 100%. I'm like, I live for fluency like this. So even in a shitty situation, I'm rolling through this. And I'm like, this brings me joy. The what's next? So then the computers go. And I say to the kids, okay, we need to have a classroom meeting. We need to talk about what this looks like. This is what happened over 5 weeks. This is what I was impressed with. This is what I was not impressed with. You're going to fix the things I wasn't impressed with. And you're going to bump up the things I was impressed with. And you're going to be so awesome. And you're going to do everything you can that when we come back, now remember they're grade 3, right? I'm like, when we come back, you're going to be rewarded like you've never been rewarded before. And they're salivating. Because they're like, what are you going to do for us? And I'm like, we're going to do whatever you want to do. And now they're really like, what are you talking about? Which we ended up creating a video, a pump-up video for us to move for the pivot, right?
What is it again? Proud Pivot. We already walked away from it.
We walked away from it, but the good thing is we've recorded it, so we can always come back.
Proud Pivot. Not problem.
No. Proud Pivot. I don't know. Let me mark this. It. I'm not even taking notes today, so I'm marking at 7:56, so we got to roll back 1 or 2 minutes from there, but 3 P's. Okay. So I tell them we need to do better. We need to do this. It's going to happen. What are you worried about? And then they start. They're like, we're worried about, you know, you teach us things, you give us work, and we don't know how to do the work because you're not with us to stand there and tell us what to do. And they like, we're going through, it turned out to be a great afternoon because I already knew what it would look like. I already knew what the pivot looks like, and I only had a couple of hours. So my role, get the computers out of my classroom and back into the library so that the people down there can do what they need to do with the computers. Number two, talk about what this looks like online again. Number three, how do we get ready for it? Because I only have now an hour left and we have to go outside for recess. Then we have to come in. We have to make sure we're all ready to go. It's like your dad walks into the house. He's like, pack the bags. We have a flight tomorrow morning. We're going to Florida for a week. Well, the first time you have to do that, it's kind of stressful. The third or fourth time, you're like, right on, we're going to Florida. And you already know what goes in the go bag. You already know. You just grab it, throw it in the bag, you're gone. This is what it felt like the other day when we found out we were going to pivot. So my principal told us, tell your kids tomorrow will be an asynchronous day. Because like our heads are spinning. So we can't just, you're not just going to go from face to face to full day synchronous tomorrow. It's not happening. And I was like, yes. You know what I thought? I'm like, this is friggin' leadership right here. This is leadership. This is recognizing what your people need and supporting them. And I have to tell you, it was one of the best gifts I've been given this year. One of the best gifts when my principal gave me. So the next morning was hardcore asynchronous. So I produced stuff for my kids to work on, and I was available to answer their questions and work with them. And then lunch came, and after lunch, it was my time to plan. And I was able to plan out a map of what the week will look like. And I was actually able to plan a couple of numeracy lessons. That's been the hardest thing for me in the virtual is the math. I have to put something together, a lesson, but I have to provide the kids with a digital way of doing the practice and demonstrating their understanding to me. That's been the hardest thing for me, but I had the time to do it. And so yesterday morning when we went full synchronous, I was ready to rumble, man. I was ready. And my kids were awesome yesterday. My kids were awesome because we've built in some things to help motivate us. And now we just need to do it over and over and over again to be fluent with it again. So that was my week. That was my work week. It feels like a blur between going to school and being emotionally exhausted of my surroundings, and then being told you're going home and you're not coming back for a week, but you're going to be working virtually with the kids. It didn't sting like it stung before. It still stings, but now it's all about context, right? I could go back to school and not see a soul and not have any planning time. Or I can work from home or my classroom, have planning time, not see anybody, and still get stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
So when you put it that way, bring on the virtual. I'm good. I'm ready. Lecce should be proud of himself. This is what he's building.
Here's maybe something that he didn't realize that he was building. So proud pivot. Possibility, not proud pivot problem.
No.
Potential, proud pivot potential.
No. It's just not coming to us now.
It's not. And I think all those work, but we can't hit rewind, right?
No. I wish we had somebody listening to us.
I guess you could open up in another window the live feed. You can rewind the live feed, can't you?
I don't know about that.
Dude, your computer can handle it. You should try it. Here's what Lecce didn't realize or think about in this. And you've got me thinking about what my proud pivots are. So one proud pivot I'll say is definitely working with the teacher candidate. Because I'm betting that, and I could be wrong, faculties out there, please, you know, forgive me if I'm wrong. There's a fossil, right? Forgive me if I'm wrong. I'm going to add that to the list, the fossil list. For those of you just tuning in, fossil fuel are these kind of sayings that I've been tracking that really don't feel like they don't have the nuts and bolts. They don't have traction anymore, right? So what is that? Forgive me. Forgive me if I am wrong. Okay, I'll add that to the Padlet later. So faculties, as I said, forgive me if I'm wrong. But I'm not getting the sense that faculty students are getting the full flavor of what adaptive learning is. Now, adaptive learning is what we call it in York Region. Okay. It's probably more, it's more the term adaptive learning is more... I think it's more of what's happening at secondary than elementary. Elementary is getting wagged like you. Some shut down, some openings. Some teachers, you know, disappearing. Some teachers reappearing. Kids moving back and forth between elementary virtual. Kids coming back from elementary. So I feel like there's a lot more flexing going on at elementary, as you've experienced. At secondary, our adaptive model has been stable. Now, I'll say specifically, when we talk about the adaptive model, we're talking about the face-to-face, so students going to school still. So our adaptive model is, we have four blocks in the day. The first block is a longer block. It's like 150 minutes. And then we have a lunch break for travel. So the students are coming in for their block one, and then they go home for the block two, three, four in the afternoon. So one of the effects, so me teaching learning strategies, one of the things that has happened is that I'm experiencing, and it just kind of occurred to me the other day, is that I'm experiencing what I would kind of say, and it's funny to even notice it, I am experiencing a flipped classroom. I'm experiencing a pure flipped classroom. So the kids have, so what I've done is as soon as, okay, so when we, around this time last year, when the story began in a galaxy not so far away, I right away thought to myself, well, I'm really happy that I never really pursued hyperdocs, but I kind of understand hyperdocs. So I'm going to start to pursue that, and I'm going to start building lessons that work in hyperdoc mode. We're going to be all in gaps. I have a ton of resources. I have a ton of content that I've produced myself through videos and little thinkabouts. I got cool people that I can draw in to kind of talk to classes. So I'm going to start leveraging the hyperdoc. So I came into September thinking to myself, with I'm at a new school. I'm going to be teaching learning strategies and math. So I need a way to move and think about what adaptive learning will look like when I have the kids with me face to face. And then when I don't have them with me, but I want to maintain the relationship, I want to maintain the connection, I want to feel that deep sense of, I know the kids know me, and we know what we're doing. So the creation of this hyperdoc and me being able to do a micro lesson on what they need to do on the hyperdoc. So right now we're just wrapping up unit one, and we have an inquiry question for the learning strategies classes. What does it mean to be an effective learning strategist? So the students are doing research based on the, so this is a grade 11 course. They're doing some primary research on their own student practice. They're looking at their school work so far and other classes, and they're examining their accommodations. They're doing, we have something called My Blueprint, which is kind of like the career, does career cruising mean anything to you? So it's we use something that's kind of like the old, this is the 2.0, My Blueprint does similar things. So they're doing some surveys, doing some reflective practice. And ultimately the kids, we've talked about different ways to demonstrate our learning. And I said to the kids, you get to decide how you want to bring this evidence once you've analyzed it. How do you want to produce it? The kids like, can I do a spoken word poem? Yeah. Can I do a slide deck? Yeah. Can I write an essay? Sure. Will you make a, can I do a test? I'm like, well, let's talk about that. Cause that would be me having to design the test, right? Which I don't really want to do, to be honest. I want them, but I'll work it through with them. That's just how they want to demonstrate their learning. Where I'm going with this is what Lecce didn't realize in this plan, and maybe others have when they've shifted to more digital, enforced digital learning, is that I'm actually spending a lot of one-to-one time with my students digitally. So I'll open up a breakout room, or I'll open up a second Google Meet and kind of monitor back and forth. And I'm really getting to know the kids in a way that, despite the fact Learning Strategies has a low cap, you know, our actual student enrollment is low, and we spend a lot of one-to-one time supporting the kids, there's something about this digital system that when the kids are in the room together, they're really quiet. And this is something that's been said time and time again by others, that the kids just won't talk. But I find when I get them in the one-to-one, they do. And I am leaning heavily on my special education knowledge. I'm leaning heavily on my guidance knowledge, because they really are counseling sessions. They're counseling sessions with the kids, and them sharing elements of their story and their challenges. And I'm betting, like I said, I don't think Lecce had any intention in creating a framework that actually works in favor of kids. I don't believe it. But I will say in my particular context, I am getting to know my kids at a level that I'm not quite sure I've gone this deep before. And it doesn't make it, I'm not suggesting this makes things easier, because really it's actually opening up bases of investigation that I have to go into as far as supporting the kids. And I really have to dig in to deeply think about what is like, there's a funny tipping point there that in learning strategies, in developing learning strategies in an IEP, often that's a laundry list of strategies, even at the best of times. We started this semester by talking about not all strategies work in all situations. Not all accommodations work in all situations. And I kind of leaned on them. I said, as senior students, you have to be trimming that list down. And I'm gonna force you to trim that list down so that when you're hitting your senior level courses, you're able to do, you know, exercise some agency and self-advocacy that you probably couldn't do in grade 9. You now have evidence from your learning, evidence from sort of other students learning, and evidence as to how teachers operate in general. You should be able to speak to and say, all right, here's my IEP. Yeah, I've got those ones under instructional under instructional accommodations. Only those two work with math for me. Those three will work in English, and I'm still trying to figure out the ones for art. And because I'm spending the one-to-one time with the kids, I'm really getting the backstory to how they've become the student that they are. And that's a funny space, because I think even learning strategies teachers, they strive, any other spec ed teachers out there, any student success, any teacher, I'll start with that, any teacher. But as your classroom cap gets smaller, as the cap gets smaller, your opportunity to get to know the kids gets bigger. And I'm really seeing that. I think back to my experience when I was in the ASD program. I've mentioned to you about being at the kitchen table, and you get the sense that the line between you being a teacher and you being a family member is blurred. I'm approaching that space with my students this year. I'm being mindful of maintaining professional connections and sort of being a professional resource. I feel like I'm getting to know my students at a level that I haven't been able to achieve in my learning strats before. And that's a pivot, proud pivot possibility. Did I say that one before? I don't know. I'm coming back to potential, proud pivot potential. I think we did something, it was something positive. Oh, no. Proud positive pivot?
Yes.
Woo!
Proud positive pivot. Yeah.
A proud positive pivot, because we are in a lot of spaces, and you and I have gone there. Hell, I did a whole poetry series on in September, talking about what I think I was looking directly at what is. I wasn't going too catastrophic, but there were a few in there that people were like, damn, that's dark. And it's I've actually gone back and read some of them, and I was on point. Like it wasn't too, that was me burning it out of my system, right? But it's funny because you go into these spaces and it's easy to lean on the everything's broken. And I mentioned to you on the on-ramp, I've noticed that you are talking more, you're expressing a more functional side to digital learning that you were not in that space before. And I think that there's something about the trauma that can sometimes color the direction that our thinking is going to go, and whether or not we're willing to think in that space. I would say that my feelings about what's going on with your school is that some of that trauma is coming back. Our school where I'm at, my kids' school and the school where I'm working, we haven't had the shutdowns. When our secondary decided to be home, it was everybody home. There weren't some schools that were open and some schools that were, or some classes that were there and some classes that weren't. I haven't experienced that yet. I'm expecting that'll be traumatic for me to notice that. back to getting to my kids, though, there's the proud, the positive, say it.
The proud positive pivot.
Yeah, proud positive pivot is that I am getting to know the kids and enjoying getting to know the kids. And I think the kids are enjoying being known, being seen, being talked to. Because here's how class would roll typically. So I haven't had them in the face-to-face block yet. So the period that I have students for is 50 minutes long, 5-0. Now we're under a mandate where 80% of the class is synchronous. 20% of the students can work on their own. So we go, you know, that gives you about a half an hour after you get attendance and everything done of face-to-face. But you have to be mindful that 30 minutes of talking at the kids to get something done doesn't often get that thing done. So I'm trying to give them the opportunity to get to work as fast as possible, which is why I standardized my HyperDocs. I created a template. I talked with the kids for the first 2 weeks. How does this work? Do you understand it? Does the document itself direct you clearly? What should I add? What should I take away? And then at some point you have to stop surveying and just kind of move with a thing and help kids to get there. So I went through, my teacher candidate was looking at my logs from, let's say, log one. That's what I call them, logs, from log one to log five. He said every single one of them is like, he noticed that every one had a different element. And then around log six, I settled in. I said, because by that point, I wanted to create a vehicle that we could all drive in. Everyone had to be on the same page. And that had to do with colorization. That had to do with font. It had to do with spacing. It had to do with procedural writing, being very specific. There was a lot of little nuances that changed. But because I did that, and because we worked through the grind of how to use this document for our learning, I can now spend time with the kids talking. So I'll be, every single class, I'm taking care of a few more kids. And on the week, I'm spending time with each one of them, kind of checking in where they're at. And this is also a way for me to embed resourcing for their other courses when I have them with me. Because that's, you have, I mean, the students, if they're on your resource list, you're just trying to find them and check in with them. The kids that are in your strats class, you resource them as well, but you also are teaching them a learning strats class if they're on withdrawal support. So in that moment where I get to talk to them and we get to get real for a minute, I'm really enjoying that. That's the proud positive pivot.
High school teachers, I'm so impressed with what I'm seeing them do in my district.
Mm-hmm.
My son, I think I've mentioned this before, the learning that he's participating in is not ideal for him. This business of like learning from home on a computer for any 14-year-old is ridiculous, but I do know he's got some friends that are, they're just already, they're 14 and they're focused, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hyper-focused. And it's funny because sometimes I'll say to my son, can you do a little bit of that? Like, can you just be, because everything's like, well, it's not due yet. It's due on this day. And I'm like, when do you think you're going to actually work on this thing? The day before it's due? And I'm like, we're not doing that in this house. Your dad lived like that all his life. He's not living like that anymore if he's going to help you. So I watch my son and I know how difficult it's been for him. The learning, the social, or the lack of social aspect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not ideal, right? And I'm hearing from staff I know in high schools, and they're telling me, dude, your son's kicking butt compared to what we're seeing here. Like, we're seeing kids that just don't come.
It's good kids stuff.
They're not handing anything in. They're not doing anything. And we can't support them the way that we would if we were face-to-face every day.
Yep.
So this, you know, this information is good for me because I need that. I need that context. I need those markers along the way. So my respect for high school teachers has, not that I disrespected them before, but I really appreciate what they're doing. Yesterday, you know, in my recess times working from home, I'd go downstairs and I'd see my son on his Chromebook and he's just sitting there. And I look at his screen and everybody's camera's off, right? And the teacher is just talking away. Like, the teacher's got the material that the kids need to see on the screen and the teacher's talking. And I was like, is that your religion or your science teacher? He's like, it's my science teacher. I said, does anybody ever talk to him? He's like, every now and again, he'll ask somebody to, you know, answer a question or to provide information or whatever, and people do. I'm like, God, this guy's doing the face-to-face teaching now, and then in the afternoon, he's running the asynchronous with the other cohort.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is nuts. Like, I didn't hear much revolt from the high school teachers when they were told how they had to do this. And I'm just appreciative. So my son's had, this is his fifth and his sixth course this year. And I'd say all but one of his teachers, in my opinion, has been like over the moon fantastic with my kid and with my wife and I. I'm very appreciative. And I think we let them know. You know, we communicate with them. We let them know. You said something that sometimes we look at everything that's broken. I need to know what's broken. And I need to know what's broken so that I can prioritize what I want to work on fixing. Because mm-hmm. I can't fix it all. And I don't do well with fixing little bits of a bunch of different things. That's important for me to know what's broken. And there was so much broken at my school this last week.
Mm-hmm.
That I started working, you know, Thursday morning on how to fix some of it, what needed to be fixed for me to move in a positive direction.
I think that's the trauma that I was referring to. And it doesn't have to be big trauma. Sometimes it can just be the traumatizing effect of noticing, mm-hmm. you know, when you kind of cue in to what is.
You know, if I was still getting my planning time this week, I don't think I would have felt as broken as I did by the end of the week. Like when I was hearing, oh, this class is closed now, they're going remote. I thought, oh, I feel so bad for the teacher and for the kids that they just have to turn and shift like this. But then I started thinking, well, this means they're going to get their planning time. Like they're going to have time to do things outside or within the school day, right? Because I could work all night if I want to, but I don't want to work all night. I'd like to spend time with my family. I'd like to do things that I like that I don't get paid for. I mean, I'd like to do some stuff too. But the day at school, you're with your kids all day. You have duties. You're running around and making things happen. I depend on my planning time. I depend on it. It's a time for me to step out of the room, make sure I'm good for the next day, make sure I'm good for the remainder of the day that I'm in, come up with some backup plans. And that's what saved me, right? The backup plan saved me, but I felt like these people, okay, their class is closed, so they have the added stress of having to shift the way that they're planning and delivering curriculum and take care of their kids. But they're going to have some time because everybody who would give them the time is sitting at home in quarantine. And I just, so I wonder, is that what broke me? The fact that I wasn't seeing my colleagues. I didn't have time to do the job the way that I like to do my job. Now, mind you, I still got through the week, right? I was still doing my job, but it was hurting. It hurt. I was losing pieces of me. So when I found out we were going remote, I can't even believe that I'm saying it. Like, I can't even believe that under these circumstances, I prefer to be virtual. That is huge for me, but that's a good sign for me. There's hope for me because I'm able to step into different perspectives, right? And look at myself and look at my situation. I'm not so fixated on something that I can't step out of that for a minute and look around and see what's going on around me. and to change my opinion and to change my mind. So if my principal says to me, okay, you can go back to school face to face with your kids, but you have to continue to keep them distanced. You have to police the mask policy. You're not getting any planning time. You still have all your duties and you don't really get to talk to your colleagues. That's what face to face is going to look like. Or you can be virtual. You can choose to work at home, or you can come into the building and work out of your classroom. You're still not going to see your colleagues, but you're going to get your planning time. You don't have to worry about duty, and you don't have to worry about enforcing distancing and the masks. What do you pick? Right now, I pick virtual. But we thought you hated virtual. Well, I did under the circumstances I was in when you told me to go virtual. But now I've already lost certain parts of me. So it's like I'm not mourning that loss anymore. That was the what is. I'm in the what's next. And the what's next is, it looks brighter to me. It looks brighter. It looks more hopeful. And that's, I guess, where I'm aiming my sights. So it's crazy to me that me talking like this right now feels crazy because it's so novel. So you should have seen my wife, the look on her face. She's like, you should see yourself right now. I'm like, but look at all the positives. Like, the positives far outweigh the negatives right now. And yeah, if my boss comes back and says, okay, we're done for the year, I would be like, whoa, that would hit me pretty hard. Mm-hmm. Because that's the remainder of the year to engage in something that you're not 100% fluid in, but I guess I would just become more fluent with it, right?
Yep.
I guess. I mean, I've become more fluent with wearing my mask. I know how to wear it on my face so it doesn't bother me as much.
I wonder if this will give a bit of a prompt to your union to negotiate differently for planning time. Because for the most part, my prep time hasn't been interrupted because of the way that they decided to roll out the adaptive learning. And I mean that from a secondary perspective. It seems to me that elementary planning time is far too contingent on unreliable factors. And I know yours is in some ways a lot more human system. I get that. But our planning time, my planning time, my prep time, put it this way. Is there a cap on the number of times you can lose your planning time?
No.
Yeah, so we have that. We have a cap. So the way it works for us is we would be given duties. So we have a scheduled prep time. We have a four period, let's say a 5-period day if we include lunch. 3 of the periods are 225 minutes of instructional time is what we're contractually obligated to do. And then we have one period that's 75 minutes long, and no more than 37.5 minutes of that time can be taken up with covering a duty. So for example, if you were away on a day, they would call me in for one half, and then somebody else would cover the other half. And there's a total number of those that you can get in a school year. So there's somebody that's trying to map out those coverages to make sure that classes are always covered. But one of the truths are is because we shifted with this hybrid base, I'm imagining that, and I don't have access to the numbers, but imagining the whole teacher absence is down because I'm not getting duties, right? We don't have sports running, which also can cause duties. Like, we don't have sports and activities where a teacher's taking their class on a field trip. So that would sometimes cause a duty as well. None of these factors occur. So I've been getting my prep time consistently this whole school year. I've had what's called, so for us, we have duties and we have on calls. So duties are where you're assigned something for the week, like cafeteria. There's no CAF open right now. Halls, we still have hall duty. We used to have bus duty and you would do before school and after school. We don't really, I don't know, maybe some schools have that. When I first started teaching back at Williams, we had bus duty where you'd go out and you'd have to be there a little bit earlier. And then you'd stay 15 minutes after the bell till all the buses leave. So you'd do your 37.5 minute job split in half. So yeah, it shows a, I think it's, it kind of is showing, a real inequity in a lot of ways because we both have prep to do, right? And I still have my lunch. I could do my prep on my lunch if I wanted, right? But to have your prep time to actually get your work done, yeah, it strikes me like that's a bit of a flaw in the elementary system that they don't have, that you are not more guaranteed your prep time.
And well, here, let me add some perspective too. Our buddy Carlos, you know, I've not missed my prep time like he's missed his prep time. Like he's missed so much prep time this year. The dude, when he talks about it, I will shut my mouth and not say a word. Because I'm struggling with inconsistent planning time here and there.
Mm-hmm.
He's dealing with, basically it's the norm that he not get his planning time.
Yeah.
And the board will pay you back, but you have to prep for the prep teacher to come into your room, which sucks.
Yeah, you've walked me through that. That's problematic.
And it takes, you know how much energy it takes to plan for being out of your room.
Yep.
And so imagine your principal says, okay, I can give you two blocks back to back today. You're like, man, that means I have to prep for 80 minutes. That's a lot of prep. So then when I think of myself and then I think of Carlos, I don't feel so bad anymore because Carlos is like, he's a teacher that I know he's been vocal about it. He's lost so much preparation time. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And it's like, yeah, you'll get it back, but there's nothing like having it every day.
Yeah.
You know, because when you get it back, you have to plan for it. So it's like double. You got to plan for the prep and then you get to go and keep planning for whatever you need to plan for. Like it's.
And that's the, I think that's the flaw in the planning time is that it's can that you, like there is no course scheduled during my prep time. So it could be accidentally taken away from me, but it's not accidentally given to me. Right. It's always there. So trying to figure out how to formalize that in an elementary schedule that doesn't have rotation, I could see would be challenging.
Then there's the way you find out too, right? Mm. Like sometimes it's busy in the office. So you get the call, you don't get the call right when the day starts. Hey, you're not getting your planning time today. It's, you know, half an hour before lunch or, you know, 5 minutes before your planning time, and you get the call, you're like, yeah, there's nobody here for your planning today. And you're like, oh, thanks for letting me know. That's another one too. And it's become more of a commonplace this year because we don't have enough supply teachers to cover all the absences, but somebody will come on the PA system and be like, so-and-so's not here today. That means there's a handful of you that there's nobody to give you your planning time. Sorry. And then it's like the mad dash to find something to fit into that time with your kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've become pretty open about it with my students. You know, like I'll say, planning time teacher's not coming today, so I'm going to be with you, but this is my plan. This is what you're going to do during that time. It's not going to be a big song and dance from me. It's going to be, we're going to finish up this, or we're going to take time to work on this that we never really get extra time to do.
Yep.
And if it's a gym day, you know, they'll say, can we go to the gym? And I'm like, yeah, let's take a look at that. That's an option for sure. But it's just, it's hard, man. Carlos is listening in. He just posted. Oh, he's posting comments.
Nice.
So the first one, well, here, I'll post it.
Let's do it.
He said, the misery of my life, LOL.
I'm sorry, Carlos. Let me land on that for a second, Carlos. I do this all the time with my students. My students create these really fascinating dissonant statements. I had a student that would constantly post into the chat, sir, like something to the effect of, sir, I'm not having a great day, or this is the worst day ever, or I'm really not happy right now. And then they would put LOL on the end. So I asked them, I'm like, which one is it? I said, I get it. But it's that funny space, people putting exclamation marks, and other people put the happy emoji. And just before that, there's like this statement of pain and trauma. So it's Carlos, you know, you feel your feels today. Yeah. And if I get it, if it's comedic, we can kind of be that. I know Carlos just a little bit. It's funny to see that brings to mind, though, that getting to know you thing that I was talking about with my students and spending one-to-one time with them. I found that the students have stopped posting those types of statements in there because they're starting to recognize the worth and importance of their emotional state. Because by me spending time with them and talking to them about it, they're not sort of putting in the confusing extra LOLs or happy face emojis. They're being more intentional and specific in what they're saying because they're getting intentional and specific attention back. So I'm playing with you, Carlos, but thanks for bringing that little bit to mind, because I feel, and what I'm noticing is that the students last semester, when we first flipped into adaptive, they were all about the LOLs. Or the, you know, laugh my ass off on the floor kind of moments, but you're actually reading what they just wrote prior to that emoticon or that acronym. And as the adult in the room, you're like, that's not something that actually people laugh about, or that's not actually something that should have a heart emoji on it or an exclamation mark. And the kids are like, yeah, but I just always do that. And it starts to make me sort of think I need to have more conversations about feeling comfortable with our emotional states. That's where my brain kind of goes when I see that. So, Carlos, bro, I care about you. You know where to find me. Happy to chat. Yeah, Carlos, I appreciate you.
He's, if you know Carlos, you know that the LOL does fit nicely there, in my opinion, because he'll deal with the what is and then move to the what's next pretty quick. At least he does in public.
I didn't take his statement as a statement of trauma. But I will say there's flat effect when someone just says something to you about a thing and you're like, man, that's like, you should be having some feels about that. But then flat effect can also be created by having this paradoxical kind of statement, right? When you put those two things together, that's definitely like it's an emotional statement with an asymmetrical emotional emoticon. That's a flat effect as well. So yeah, in this case, I don't think he's necessarily, I think he's expressing truth. I think he's expressing truth, but I don't believe right away that he's expressing trauma. And I think that's something that I've been trying to pay attention to in my classrooms, because sometimes the students don't even know that they're shell-shocked. And it's not for me to bring that to them because I can't provide that depth of therapy, but I'm just watching for the moments where they need to chat it out.
I like that, the shell shock, right? It's like sometimes when people tell you something, they give you negative news, but they're smiling or laughing about it. God. Because they're just so, it's the conflicting messages in your mind.
Yeah, your brain isn't firing off, right?
Right. So Carlos has gone off the deep end here with the comments. So let's see if I can do it some justice. So Carlos says that they always read during the time that he's supposed to have planning time. He said years ago, dismissing the planning time was misery. And he said that his school's been lacking supply teachers for 5 years. He's not exaggerating. This one, it kills me that he's fought the union and the board and achieved nothing.
Mm-hmm.
He talks a little bit about trauma, that it can be stressful, 100%. Mm-hmm. This is a good one. It says he does agree with you, Chris, so that's a good thing. The LOL is part of the trauma.
Yeah. For
Carlos, it's part of the trauma.
Yeah. That asymmetrical response, right?
Oh, and he says where he comes from, many people deal with trauma with humor, with a laugh.
Totally get the coping mechanism. So I think this is where, and sometimes the gesturing and the cultural norms can also create I can remember working with an employee that when they, one of their head gestures is his head gesture. I noticed this in some of his other colleagues, which I knew these guys that were working for me were all from a similar place in Sri Lanka. So this is information I did have access to. They invited me into it. I knew this. And I noticed one of the head gestures that was a part of their culture. It struck me because I didn't see this happening anywhere else. So I'm doing the unskilled anthropologist kind of noticing, but they would move their head side to side almost in what looked like the, almost to me without having the full lexicon of what's going on. It almost looked like they were saying no in the way that their head would pivot back and forth. Yet when I heard them talking, they were not actually in disagreement. So the playbook I'm playing from, it's like, it seems like they're disagreeing because the head gesture, but that's just a head gesture. And so I get it that there are some cultures. I find for my background. So I have Polish Irish, but my Polish side, sometimes there is a very telltale, or there was a very telltale sort of glare and flat looking look that I can recall my grandfather, my grandmother having. And this was their sort of their processing thinking. But to look at it, I would be thinking, oh, damn, like I'm in trouble. But it was them processing it through. It was that kind of intense. And I've noticed this as well in some other connected cultures. Some individuals of Russian background, some individuals of Ukrainian background. I guess you could almost call it stern. When I was a child, it would rattle me because my mom didn't really do it that much and my dad didn't have any of that as well. So I get it that how we project, how we perform emotion and how we perform thinking can be, in this case, Carlos was talking about laughter. And I would definitely, I know this from my buddy Rui, who's of Portuguese background, hanging with his family. He actually told me, he said, I there was a couple of things where, so we spent some lunches with them, and a couple of times I'm like, hey, that went kind of cool. Your family, like that was a lot of fun. And he's like, yeah, you just have to watch though, when like laughter doesn't always mean laughter. And I was like, what? Because there was a lot of laughing going on at this meal. They said sometimes my mom and dad, when they're laughing, it's their kind of processing. And he says, I tend to come to believe that the laughing part and the smiling is one part being polite, but it also indicates a nervous response of sometimes confusion. So they're kind of laughing, just giving them the time to kind of figure out what's actually going on. I'm like, oh, I said, was I not repping well? They're like, no, that's just in how they get to know people. It's their nervous way to get to know people. So I've noticed that. And so if we go back to the dissonant Google chat, we don't even have access to some of the gesturing that would go along with some of that, the phrasing that's put in the chat, right? Mm-hmm. So a kid drops in there that they're having the worst day ever. I had another student, we were doing something, and I don't have it as an expectation. And I try to frame it as an invitation and opportunity, but I always start the beginning of the class and I'll say, you're welcome to open your mics. You're welcome to have your camera on. I say that flat out. And we've talked about working out the details afterwards just to try and encourage community building. I had a student message me sidebar, basically like they Google chat messaged me so that I have that up during the class. Mm-hmm. And they said, worst day ever. I totally wanted to open up my mic, but I'm crying all over my keyboard. And so without any facial, all I can do is take that at face value. Do you want to talk? How can I help? Do you want to just tell the story of what happened? What do you need right now? So I'll bring it back to the getting to know the kids and being able to spend some time talking directly to them. Some of that stuff's getting ironed out. Not about to thank Lecce. Will not do it. But I will say that this is one of the proud pivots because I did this, right? I'm going to take the ownership. I did this. I stepped in. I've worked to make better connections. I'm becoming more observant. I'm finding the better words to say. Lecce didn't do any of that. So I'm going to pat myself on the back and say that was all part of that proud, positive pivot.
Let's not get Carlo started on Lecce.
All right. That's okay.
That's it.
Folks, you know, check out Carlos's feed. The guy shares wisdom and truth. So find him, follow him. Fascinating dude. Fascinating. And I appreciate him a ton.
I appreciate him as well. The authentic, what's the word? He is authentic. And if you don't know context, it might look a certain way. But if you know who Carlos is, and like, for example, Carlos has had some fun with Twitter as of late, and my wife mm-hmm. made a comment. And I said, what do you mean? She goes, Carlos, your buddy Carlos, is he the one tweeting? I'm like, yeah, how are you seeing his tweets? She goes, I have friends who follow him or retweet him or whatever. And I see it, and I'm like, oh, yeah. She goes, he seems kind of pissed off. I said, well, do you know why he's pissed off? Let me share a little bit of why I think Carlos is pissed off. Mm-hmm. And I've had even people reach out to me and say, hey, have you spoken to Carlos lately? Because I'm seeing some stuff here, and it doesn't seem like Carlos. Because everybody who knows Carlos knows he's a fun dude. He's open to everybody. Welcoming all the time. He's looking for solutions all the time. Sometimes Carlos is looking at solutions. I'm like, why are you doing that? Why don't you take the time to let these people figure things out on their own? Why do you have to solve their problem for them? But that's just who Carlos is. That's what he does. There's a lot of people like that. And I think, well, I told Carlos, he can hear me now, say it again, though. People have reached out to me and asked me if Carlos is okay. I've said he's okay. He's just frustrated. And I think he's had enough. He's had enough of, he needs to say something. And if you know Carlos, you know that he says it, and he says it with respect. He's not looking for trouble. He's just looking to be authentic and be like, hey, we got a problem here. This is a problem. We need to deal with this problem. Too many people have been too quiet for too long. So Carlos, man, he should just take the mic and we should just shut off and let Carlos take over the podcast.
We need a call-in number is what we need. See if Hurley will lend us his, if we can just, you know, call in. I don't want to pay for that extra phone line, but that might be a fun extra addition. We don't actually have guests, but you can call in and we'll put you on with us.
In all seriousness, no, Carlos says he's okay. In all seriousness, you can write that down?
Yeah.
He says he's totally okay, but that he's had enough. And we know it.
We know it. And I think this is a part of why I said, follow Carlos. Like, if you're looking for someone that is effective on social media and is shares on social media the, you know, kind of what they're going through, resources, conversation, like there's great value there. So I think so that's
I'll drop his Twitter handle. It's at, oh geez, Carlos, what did you do here, man? Am I in the right thing? Here, give me a second. Every time I put his name into Twitter, it spits up everybody but him. It's actually quite annoying. It's like, how many Carlos Roques does there need to be? you just said, why live on your knees when you can die standing? Have I said he's funny? He's a funny dude. It's one of the reasons why we're buddies. He makes me laugh. Why is it so hard to find you on Twitter, Carlos? Okay, so I believe this is him. It's
good luck. If it's like, you got to make sure you get the alpha right on this, right?
You know what I'm going to do? Yeah, it's at Carlos Roque, but he spells it funny. So I'm just going to put it.
Carlos, chat. I like how you spell it.
There, I've got it up for, so if you're listening to this, so Shref, if you're listening, it's at Carl, it's capital C, A R L, and then capital O S R, capital O Q U E.
Is it, are they zeros?
I don't know. They might be zeros. That's why people need to watch the feed, because it's on the feed right
now. I think he might message and tell us. I thought they were zeros. That he's getting all Twitter clever there.
I don't know why he's doing that. He's just messing with people's heads. Carlos, stop doing that.
Keep doing it.
Yeah, I say stop. Clough says no. Keep pushing, Carlos. Keep pushing.
Well, I say that right now because I feel like I'm on the right side of his messing with people. I'm on Team Carlos. I'm on Team Carlos.
Team Carlos. There is no other team. I'm not even going to give an alternative. You're either Team Carlos or you're not. There is no other team. It's Team Carlos or Team Not. I don't know.
I like it.
Thanks for joining us, Carlos. We appreciate it. There is another listener. They are the silent partner, the silent listening partner to the Decoded Podcast. Well, Clough, you got some artwork for us this week?
Yeah, I'm just putting the last lines on it. Give me one moment.
I've been thinking about Shref lately.
Have you?
I haven't heard from him, or his tweets haven't popped up in my feed.
Out of context, someone might think that you're like talking about a certain food item.
Shref?
Yeah. If they haven't listened to previous, they're like, yeah, Roland Tolley was talking about this sandwich today called a Shref. What's on that sandwich?
That would be cool to make a sandwich called a Shref.
Shref.
I have to tell you right now that if we're talking about Shref as food, I think sweets. I think like when I say Shref, I think of like a Joe Louis. I think of like a pastry type of dessert when I think of Shref.
I'm thinking more of a grilled pressed sandwich.
Okay. Now, when you said sandwich, if I think about Shref and sandwiches, I got to think it's a sandwich that's connected to Florida, but also with Cuban influence. This is what I get when I think of a sandwich and I think of Shref.
I'm thinking, okay, maybe we go like a rolled, more of a pressed soft taco kind of a thing.
Oh, yeah. Maybe what's the date today? Today is February 27th. And Shref is usually, well, I post this late all the time. So we'll hear about, hopefully we'll hear from Shref about this sandwich business closer to the end of March. That's what I'm thinking.
The Shref sandwich.
Carlos thanks us. He was doing his, He does thank us. He was doing his workout. So poor guy. Whoa, is that Vision? Sorry, Carlos, for interrupting. But Chris is showing us his artwork, and it looks like it's Vision from Marvel. Tell me about the look on Vision's face, Clough.
It's stern, eh? I don't know.
It is stern.
I think that's what kind of got me. I feel like I'm looking at my grandfather, to be honest. That's the look. That's that stern look of my grandfather. Grandpa John, that's him. That's the stern. He's processing. He was also a great card player, so he wasn't about to give up the look at all. So
he had the game
face. That's him. That's his poker face staring right back at you. Look, if I said it just kind of right.
Oh, dude, that is cool. But I got to
be honest. Does it almost look like me? Like I'm putting it on my own shoulders? No, okay.
Does it look like you? But can I be honest with you for a second?
Seriously, you should.
Okay. Do you have a second?
Just for a little conversation?
Yeah, just for a little one.
Okay.
Okay, so I love that picture of Vision, but I wish you had done something slightly different with him.
Put a beard on him?
No.
Oh.
Have pieces of him missing.
Mm.
Because that would have fit so well with where I'm coming from with my Vision perspective. Now, it's funny. Nobody was here. Oh, maybe they heard it last week. I don't know. Nobody was here this morning when we started and we were talking about Vision with the pieces missing. I don't even know if we recorded that, if that was just
I think that was on ramp.
On ramp.
But okay. We messed hard with that. We messed hard. It was good.
Now, dude, I have to tell you, there's something about that picture that you just showed. That I want a copy of that. So are you going to put that particular, will you put that particular artwork on your site for sale? Because I'd
what,
like
on, to the, see, on the Redbubble?
Yeah, because I'd like to see what options I have of that picture of Vision with the Redbubble site. Like, I don't know what I would get, but I would like to see what's available.
I haven't put any of them there yet. Like I told you, you're getting your coffee table book at some point. I'm still slowly, like I've gotten better. I actually scanned this. I might not be able to scan it right away because I did this one in acrylic paint this time. So there's still paint that needs to dry on it. But as soon as it's dry, I throw it on the scanner and I scan it. I haven't put any of our actual pictures on Redbubble. So you will get a copy of this in book form at some point. I can try. I can put it up there. There is some cool options. Like you could get that on, I'll just leave it. I'll let you sort of see what you can get it on. There are some kind of cool things you can put those pictures on. The other one too, I want to put up. Do you remember the vulnerability one with the armor?
Oh, that's one of my all-time favorites. Yeah. That one would be good like on a, I'm thinking postcards. I don't know why.
Yeah, they have it on there are postcards and you can get it on a print size.
Now don't get me wrong, there's
I won't, to be honest.
Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, actually I'm not sure. I'll make a note of that. Let me just make a note of that. There's another one.
Let me make a note of that, or I'll circle back. I have to, like, I'm going to be honest here, that I do enjoy your drawings every week, but some of them, and I think this would go with anybody really, some of them really have spoken to me over the years. Like some of them, like the vulnerability one with the armor, this one Vision, because I think of how I'm feeling these days about losing parts of me. Yeah. There's some that are just epic to, like, in my little brain, I'm like, it's the be all and end all, that artwork. Other pieces, I appreciate them and enjoy them, but I wouldn't spend money on them because they don't speak the same way.
Neither would I. Sometimes I wouldn't spend money on them. There are some pieces that come out real quick and I look at what I've done and I go, holy crap. Like they have a deeper impact than others that I take a lot of, like I was looking at some of them. I took a lot of time to do. I just have them over on the side, a few that I've done. And I look at them and I think to myself, well, it's okay. I spent a lot of time for something okay. So some are epic and some are ep quick.
That's a good one.
It's all process though, right? Yeah, it's all process. So in some ways I'm getting better in my art. And then as soon as I get too comfortable with sort of a style, I tend to switch it up. So just kind of adding to my art skills, I guess.
I want you to share something. Mm-hmm. I hope you're comfortable. Well, I don't care if you're not comfortable.
I can always say no, right?
That's right. You can always say no. I wanted to talk to you about this on the podcast. I wanted you to talk about it. You recently sent out, well, I think, I don't know if it was a tweet or an email. You're putting together this cool idea for March, this cool creative idea for March. Mm-hmm. Can you share that? It's about creation and you pairing people up
mm-hmm.
to create and exchange creations with each other. Can you talk about that a little bit?
What do you understand it is? Let's play with that a little bit. Okay. What do you understand it to be?
This is what I understand it to be. Chris sent out a message. I don't know if it was a tweet or I don't know if it's email to a list of people that he's connected with over creative stuff. Chris sent out this call for people who wanted to participate in a project that he's doing for the month of March. And what my understanding is that people signed up to participate. People fill out a form that mm-hmm. say that they want to participate in this creative activity. And the creative activity is basically you will be paired with another person who's filled out the form and you will create something. It could be poetry, it could be paint, it could be video form, it could be audio, music, whatever. You create something and then you exchange it with the person you are paired with.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think then that leaves things open to for conversation, for discussion, mm-hmm. for some kind of connection. This is how I took it. So right away, well, I did two things with it. Right away, I said, I'm in. And I filled out the form because I think I would love to do my creative process through video based on this connection with this individual. But I don't want to be too connected to the individual. Like, I don't know if I'm comfortable with sitting down and chatting with this person, but I am open to the idea of, hey, this is John Doe. And then I kind of get a feel for who is John Doe. And then I create something that I can share with John Doe and there be like some type of thread of connection between my creation and that person.
Mm-hmm. That's so, my interpretation. Yeah, you're right on point. It's interesting. I don't have enough people in there yet to run it. So I'm going to be promoting it this weekend again. I'm going to keep promoting it through March. So so it's called March Art Crawl. And you're right. The idea was an offer. On one hand, it's the buddy bench. That's what it is. It's the buddy bench. You're gonna meet somebody that's sort of ready to share and talk. People that are willing to sort of do art, whether it's poetry, like you said, poetry, paint, doesn't matter, whatever your medium is, video, song. There's a little bit of a random hat element to it that I just said, you know, sign up on the form and I'll pair you up. And then it's up to you two to connect. So by signing up, you realize I'm going to share contact details. I'm going to leave it up to you two to figure out what that could be. I'm not going to enforce it. I'm not going to send out prompts. It's just a way to get people thinking about art and the act of creativity through the month of March. So that was the big concept. And it's just, it comes out of the whole, the words keep wolves at bay, kind of bigger project. I don't know if I call it a project. It's probably still a project. It's like project/community, I guess, kind of thing, which comes out of my thinking last summer that I wanted to have a digital space that explores creatives. Like, that's really what it was, and being wellness. And so it's like a side project for that. So yeah, I'm going to keep promoting it. Hopefully, get it. To be honest with you, I just want to make sure I have even number of people so that I can pair people up. I don't want to participate directly, though I could. I could participate. I'm not adverse to it. This was something that I wanted to try to get off the ground for others, and just make the connections. Yeah, and the March Art Crawl was just I thought it was a interesting play on words. So you have the month in there, you have the idea of kind of movement, both at sort of like a structured and a slow. You have the march and the crawl in there. And then the idea of a crawl kind of being, well, I was thinking pub crawl, but just that idea that it's you're getting a slow chance to kind of experience different styles of art. So in my mind, I thought maybe people would want to then meet somebody else. So they've done a little bit of work with someone. Hey, Clough, can hook me up with somebody else so I can share some different art? So
now, because it's an art crawl, will you have people's creations displayed somewhere for everybody to see?
Well, I'm being mindful that not everybody is willing to put their creativity out for others, right? So I was sort of thinking about this in both a small group and large group setting. I didn't want it to be full on marketplace where I was going to promote or post it up on any of my feeds necessarily, but everything can still be connected. I think my mention in there was just tag it with words, keep wolves at bay. So the WKWAB. And whatever social spot that you have, right? Just tag it with that and it'll be found, right? The people that want to participate with this, it'll be found. The intent isn't to sort of project this out like as a beast to the world. It's just a way to sort of run a group using digital tools. So.
Right on. Well, thanks for sharing that. Hopefully.
Yeah. No, thanks for thanks for prompting on that. I've put it out there a couple times. I'm going to really boost it this weekend. I'll probably just keep pushing it on my feeds so that I can connect some people next week. So stay tuned, dude. Stay tuned.
Hey, thanks for your time this Saturday morning. It was good to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good to talk. I mean, this is part of our process, right? So
words keep wolves at bay, baby. Thanks. I like